Welcome to episode 332 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Follard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
All right, Richard, thank you for joining me tonight. You and I have got a lot of talking tonight. We've got double the podcast fund to record tonight. And I think that's a good thing for Entertainment 2.0 listeners. Maybe not such a great thing for Home On listeners.
I'm not exactly sure what that means, but I think it'll be good. This is going to be, I think, only the second or third time that we've recorded Home On live.
Yeah, so hopefully you're in the live room with us tonight. If not, come back, follow us on Twitter. More details on that at the end of the show, but we do record these shows live, and it's lots of fun to have you in the live chat room. If you can't be here, though, you can still email us, and we've got a few emails to read tonight, too. If you want to send emails for future episodes, you can do that by emailing us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
We received a couple of email messages from Alan, and you may remember that Alan was having problems with his copy flag. And in fact, Alan was in the live chat last episode and indicated that things were working. So he continues, "Well, I spoke too soon in the chat room last week. My problems with the Ryzen Fios WRC HD affiliate channel in DC still exists. As soon as I saw the problem rear its ugly head, I installed a new beta image that Seton Support provided to my Infinity V6 PCIe, and that actually fixed the problem for that Windows Media Center box. I still have the problem on my Infinity V4 PCIe, and during my back and forth on the ticket with Seton Support for the 6, I was told that the 4 is discontinued and no longer supported for updates like this. I'll follow up with Seton as soon as I can reproduce the problem on that Media Center box and send them the logs just to make sure they don't have an image that would work with the 4. I'm also going to follow up with Verizon support when I can reproduce the problem again." Yikes.
Yeah.
He emailed us again shortly thereafter, and he says, "Hello yet again. Well, I just sat on a call with Verizon support for over an hour. A very nice woman worked my issue, could not find any information regarding the setting of the flag. She reset my cable card 3 times, and I think attempted some other things to no avail. I requested the problem be escalated, and she spoke to her supervisor, who said that licensing agreements with the content providers will only allow Verizon set-top boxes the ability to record some content. Tell that to TiVo, and that the problem could not be escalated. Fun stuff. Oh well, just thought I'd share my pain. At least my main media center is working for that channel, so I have that. I call BS
on Verizon, not
absolutely
on Alan.
Right? Absolutely, yeah. That's just a stock answer.
Yeah, it's completely untrue. It's against FCC regulations. It's just they can't do that, and that's not the reason this is happening. It's also, I don't think, just happening to Alan. I saw a message pop up on the Windows Media Center group over on Google Plus today from another person saying they were having copy protection flag issues with NBC. They didn't say where they were from, but I wonder if they're also from the Washington, D.C. area. And it could be. So it sounds like, you know, this is kind of fixed for Alan. I mean, the root cause is not fixed. Verizon is still screwing this up. But at least Seton got him a fix on one of his tuners. I was shocked. Maybe shocked isn't the right word, but I was surprised to know that they're no longer supporting the Infinity V4. But I guess it is a pretty old product at this point. And in fact, they're not even selling it anymore. So yeah. I guess that if they were selling it, then I would expect them to support it, but they're not. So
I was surprised too, but it is a very old product right now.
Yeah, it really is. I believe it came out in 2009, maybe 2010, something like that. So yeah, it's been a while. All right. Well, thank you, Alan, for those emails. Hopefully, you'll get some good news soon. We also got an email this week from Paul. He says, "Hey, guys, I've got what may be a strange and difficult question. I'm using Windows Media Center and Windows 7, and I use Total Media Theater 6 to watch my Blu-ray rips. My movie collection is managed by My Movies. Because I'm weird and actually like the Blu-ray menus, I've ripped my collection as ISO files and have My Movies set to use Virtual Clone Drive to mount the ISO file. When I watch a Blu-ray by choosing it from the My Movies app within Media Center, the brightness is set too high, and as a result, the image is washed out. It's noticeable and very distracting to me. When I launch Total Media Theater from Windows, i.e., I quit out of Media Center entirely and just go to the desktop, Total Media Theater has an AV Center dropdown in the upper right corner of the screen where I can choose different video modes and make tweaks to the brightness, contrast, and color. If I bump the brightness down a bit there, the movie looks fine. However, the same option doesn't exist when Total Media Theater is running inside Media Center. And the change I make to the brightness in Total Media Theater running outside of Media Center is not retained when running it within Media Center. It's very frustrating and distracting. Do you or maybe any fellow listeners have any ideas? Thanks." And he says, "I always have and always will love the show." Paul, I appreciate the sentiment, but you might not always love the show. What if we become terrible? It is. I'm not even sure I will always love the show, but Paul is. So I appreciate that, Paul. Thanks. So I did the best thing that I could think of doing to try and find a solution to this, because I didn't really know, because I don't use Total Media Theater. And I reached out to friend of the show, Mike Fauché, and he doesn't know for sure, and he hasn't had a chance to look on his machine yet, but he's going to get back to us. But what he said was, it does have to do with how the native display is set up versus the settings in Total Media Theater. But he says he's going to give it a look to see if he can figure it out and let us know once he's had a chance to look at it. Richard, you are, or at least were, a Total Media Theater user. Have you seen anything like this, and do you have any ideas?
I still am a Total Media Theater user, and I have not seen this problem. Now, what's interesting is I used to mount ISOs, and now I just back up my movies to folders. So I don't know if that makes a difference or not. It's interesting that he specifically pointed that out, but I have not seen this issue. It may just be that it's not noticeable enough on my set. I don't know.
You've got a pretty fantastic TV, so I would think it would be noticeable, but I don't know. I think you've just got to try to dig into those Total Media Theater settings and see if there's something in there. The other thing I wonder is this new? Or why did he just start noticing this? Paul, did you just start trying to do this? Not really sure. New TV, maybe? I'm very curious, why this is suddenly an issue.
Yeah,
because it's not like Total Media Theater was updated. Since it's not even available anymore.
Right, exactly. All right, well, hopefully someone else may have some ideas, and I hope that we hear more from Mike. So we heard from Steve, and Steve says, "So, Halt and Catch Fire didn't float your boat, but I saw the pilot episode of Mr. Robot last night, and it's looking good." He gives us a link to that, and we'll have that in the show notes. He says, "I think I've heard Josh talk about Turn, an AMC show about the Revolutionary War spies. It's not the Americans, but it's good."
I still haven't watched Turn yet.
I haven't either.
I added it to my Netflix queue and then never ended up watching it. I'll talk later in the show about what I am watching, but I might be switching over to Turn sooner rather than later.
That's a little hint. Interesting.
What's to come? This Mr. Robot show, it's a show that's going to be on USA. I don't think it's actually on yet, so I'm not sure how he watched the pilot already. It must have been available somewhere else. But this looks interesting. It's about hackers and stuff, and I love shows about hackers too. So I'm gonna try and check this out too.
Yeah, I've heard lots of good stuff about Mr. Robot, so I want to give that a try. But at the same time, I don't have time to take on something new.
Oh, and for anybody who's listening, it hasn't actually started. It premieres on USA on June 24th.
There must have been a preview available at some point because lots of people are talking about this.
Hmm. Cool. Well, might have to try and find that then. Actually, what is this watch now link right here on the IMDb link that he sent us? It is the first episode. It's a full 1 hour video. So there you go. You can watch it right on the link that we will provide for you in the show notes. All right. Our last email message of the week is from Paul. He says, "Hi guys, in case you didn't know, here's an article that describes how to remove the upgrade to Windows 10 nag. I think most HTPC users would want to do this since we don't want to lose Windows Media Center. I did this on my home theater PC and it seemed to work okay with no bad side effects that I can see." We'll, of course, have a link to this in the show notes. We're not going to go into detail about how to do this, but essentially it's just you uninstall a Windows update and then you tell Windows, "Don't ever install this update again." And it'll make that little Windows flag down in your system tray go away and theoretically keep you from ever getting Windows 10 on that machine, assuming you don't do something else to cause it to install Windows 10 on that machine, which you probably wouldn't accidentally do.
I'm not convinced that this is going to keep Windows 10 from being available as a Windows update at some point. However, it will stop the nag. It gets rid of that reserve your copy now thing.
Right. So,
good stuff.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into our news this week. On the video front, we've got an interesting post from Gizmodo about Windows Media Center.
And can I tell you, this is probably the first time I've read something on Gizmodo in about 2 years.
Probably about the same for me.
Yeah, this is not a site that I pay a whole lot of attention to. They bother me more than inform me. And I am really impressed with this write-up. So one of their writers hosted an article called "Microsoft Built a Cable Box Killer, Then They Killed It." And it's a really good history of where Media Center came from and some of the evolution of the product over the years and where Microsoft kind of missed the boat, some of the factors in the market that influenced it, like cable card and cable labs and stuff like that. I thought that this was an incredibly well-written and thorough article. Now, one of the things that I find very interesting is this author claims that we have every reason to believe that Media Center will work, and I'm quoting, "for as long as Microsoft supports Windows 7, which is officially until January 2020, and probably beyond." Do you believe that?
That's similar to what we've been saying, that, you know, Windows 7 is technically supported until 2020. Windows 8, I think, is until 2023. Both operating systems have Media Center, so there's going to need to be some support. But like we've continued to mention, it's not whether or not the OS is supported. Like, that does matter, but it's not the only thing that matters. We also need the guide data. And we don't really know when that's going to go away. I don't think it's going to go away as long as the Xbox One has guide data. We don't know for certain. Microsoft has never publicly said if those two devices use the same source for guide data, but it seems like it would make sense that they would. And, you know, maybe we'll see something public from them in the future about that as they continue to push their TV strategy on the Xbox One. But it just seems to make sense that they would continue to provide that. We don't know for sure, but we think that they will. Now, one thing that a couple of listeners have pointed out to us is even if Microsoft kills off the guide data, even that doesn't really kill Media Center because there are other third-party solutions for getting guide data into Windows Media Center.
Right.
We've talked about that in the past. We haven't talked about it a lot with regards to this topic, but it is true. And I would bet that if Microsoft does finally one day shut off the guide data to Media Center, that third-party solutions are going to be popping out of the woodwork to bring it back. So I think I generally agree with the overall thought behind this post that, you know, it's a great product. I obviously agree with that part. And I do think that it is going to be available and usable for many years to come. And who knows, you know, by then, hopefully there will be something better.
Yeah, I just think that it's presumptuous to say that Media Center is going to be alive as long as Microsoft supports Windows 7. I hope it will. I want every reason to believe that it will. As I've said, I'll continue to use it until it's not supported. But I don't think we know this for sure. I don't think we know this for sure yet. And I hope that we have some information at some point, maybe after Windows 10 comes out, that would confirm what the actual lifetime is expected to be for this thing.
Right. Yeah, we don't know for sure. It's just what we're expecting. At least what I'm expecting.
Now, let's move on to audio. And you surprised me by putting an interesting topic under audio.
Well, I think it's pretty relevant. Of course, this week was Apple's WWDC event. It was it's a developer conference, although you wouldn't have known that by the keynote. They spent about 4.5 hours, I'd say, talking about a new service called Apple Music.
Stop it. It only seemed like 4.5 hours because none of those people knew how to present.
Oh, no, they didn't. No, they didn't. So Apple Music, we probably don't need to go all in depth on what this is. It's a new music service from Apple. It's a lot like Beats Music, which they, of course, bought a year or two ago. It's streaming music. It's available on your Apple devices. It's available on Windows through iTunes. It's $10 a month. And it's a streaming music service. You know, like they're throwing in some extra things, like they're trying to put social features back in that didn't work their first time around when they tried to use Ping or whatever it was that they called their social stuff. They've got a live radio station, which I don't really get. Like, it's 2015, and that's not really how people listen to music anymore. So
90% of the people in this country listen to some form of radio over terrestrial signals.
Okay, but it's not the direction that people are going. Like, the people who are... I want to know how many Spotify subscribers still listen to the radio. Because I bet that number is way lower. Way lower.
Keep in mind that radio, the term radio, is changing. XM is radio. They have lots of subscribers. People enjoy listening to the whole DJ interaction. So that's really what they're trying to capture here. This is really the only piece of the Apple Music announcement that I'm willing to defend, because the rest of it, as far as I'm concerned, is a big snooze. I really couldn't care less about it. But I think it's interesting that they're going forward with creating, for all intents and purposes, their own station and plan on probably having more.
Yeah, that's true. There were two other things I wanted to mention about this. The first one is the pricing. So like most of the other services, if you want one license to it, it's $9.99 a month. I haven't heard anything about like a discount for a yearly subscription or anything like that. Maybe it's out there and I just haven't seen it. I'm not sure. But the thing that is perhaps more interesting is that they're going to also offer basically a family plan for $15. For 6 users.
Yeah.
And that's really aggressive. The only thing really comparable to that is Spotify does offer sort of a family plan, but it's a family plan for families with no kids, I guess, because it's only for 2 people. And it's also $15 a month. And so, you know, just looking at raw numbers, the Apple plan is a better deal. And it's probably a pretty comparable music library to Spotify. But I also wonder how many people need more than 2 people accessing one account. Like, I guess unless you're sharing it with friends, and we don't know what sort of restrictions there are and how this might tie into various iTunes account things related craziness. But I don't know how many people really need more than 2. If you do have you know, a couple of teenagers who also have iPhones and want to be able to do this, then that makes total sense. But I would bet that it's kind of one of those diminishing return sorts of things. But it's still cool to see them doing it. And I'm hoping that it pushes the rest of the industry to try to get into more aggressive pricing schemes too.
I think there's absolutely a use case for this. And I think the example that they gave where you have teens in your family or you have kids in their family, they have their own iDevices. Remember, this isn't just a phone thing. This is going to work on your iPod too.
Right.
And if you have a device that has the service on it and you want to play music, it's very likely that you don't want your recommended music and playlists to be cluttered with all the stuff that your kids are listening to. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that's the best use case here. It's pretty much the same thing that drives people to set up user accounts in Netflix nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do really like that aspect of it. The one thing I don't like about it is, and this is somewhat presumptuous by me, but I think this means that Beats Music is dead, right?
I think this means what you think this means.
So if Beats Music is dead, and Apple didn't officially, like, they never said anything about Windows Phone support for Apple Music, then I think Apple Music and Beats Music that came before it probably both gone on Windows Phone. So that's maybe unfortunate if you liked the idea of that six-user, $15 a month music service account thing and you're a Windows Phone user.
Yeah, I think this is unfortunate. I guess I'll be interested to see how long they keep the Beats Music app alive on the Windows Phone platform. I haven't yet seen anything specifically discussing the retirement of Beats Music yet, but you have to assume it's going away.
Right. It doesn't make sense for them to run two competing music services.
Now, this also means that the Apple service, well, I don't know that this means this, but I've heard that at least at launch, the Apple Music service will not be available on Sonos either. Beats Music is available to Sonos now. So that's another platform that will likely suffer from this change.
That's unfortunate, for sure. Sonos is a pretty awesome system. I have to imagine they'll get there eventually, but we don't know when. All right, so let's move on to some Microsoft stuff. We are a week out, less than a week out now, from E3, the big video game event of the year. And I expected there to be no official Xbox announcements this week. And I was wrong. That's not unusual, but still the case here. So Microsoft this week announced a couple of hardware-related things with the Xbox One. The first one is, and this was perhaps the slightly less expected one, only because we hadn't seen many leaks about it, is that there's a new version of the Xbox One console coming out. There's two main differences to it. The first one, I don't really care about. It's matte black instead of shiny black, which is cool. The top of mine is scratched to craziness, so a matte one would have been nice, but isn't worth upgrading for. The other aspect that's new in this new model is the storage. It goes from the current model has a 500 gig hard drive in it. The new one, they're doubling that to 1 terabyte of storage on board. Now, of course, this comes at a price, but surprisingly, not an insane price. The new 1 terabyte version of the Xbox One without a Kinect will be $399. And comes out on June 16th in the US and other markets later in the month. What do you think? Like, you don't think anyone's actually going to like upgrade their console for this one, do you?
I very seriously doubt that. I think this essentially becomes the one that heavy gamers are going to be buying now. Now, the thing that I'm curious about is there a version of this that comes with Kinect, or do you have to buy that with a Kinect tax?
I think you're going to get stuck with the Kinect tax because I haven't seen anything about this coming with the Kinect, but I think they should. You and I are big fans of the Kinect, and I do hope that they sell one with the Kinect for $499. If you're not interested in their hard drive and you're totally happy with using a USB 3 external drive, then you're still going to be able to get the 500 gig version. They're now officially changing that price to $350. That's basically been the special sale price for the last, 7 months at this point. So
we suspected this was going to happen.
Right. So now it's officially $350. The other news this week, well, there's actually two more stories here, but the other one we actually talked about last week. This was no surprise at all. They are releasing a new controller for the Xbox One. It will be bundled with that 1 terabyte Xbox One. And the main difference here is it's got that headset jack. Again, last week when we were talking about this, there were spy shots showing the little 3.5 millimeter headphone / headset jack on there, but no one knew for sure whether it was headphone or headset. We had hoped it would be a headset jack, and indeed it is, and it works exactly how we expected. You can plug in any, well, for the most part, any headset into that. You'll get stereo audio out of it. You'll be able to use the microphone through it, and because there's no puck plugged into the bottom of the controller, if you want to adjust levels and mixes between game audio and chat audio, you'll have to do that through the settings app on the Xbox One. The one good thing that they mentioned during this announcement is that it will support audio monitoring so that you're going to be able to hear yourself through your headset so that you don't scream while you're talking to your friends over your Xbox. So that's nice to see. And you're just going to be able to buy this controller with this headset jack. If you aren't planning to buy a new Xbox One, you can just get this new controller on its own. Last announcement, this one also not a total surprise. We knew they were working on this, but now it's officially announced. A wireless controller adapter coming for PC users. So this is just a USB dongle, basically, that allows you to pair an Xbox One controller with a PC wirelessly. You won't have to use a USB cable to connect your controller to your PC anymore. So that's really nice to see. It's kind of big. It looks a lot longer than I would have expected it to be, but I guess I don't really care. It's going to be available this fall for $24.99, or you can get it bundled with a controller for $79.95, which saves you $5 on the combined price. And the other thing that's cool about this, and you know, I don't even know if this was already supported through a USB cable, but with this adapter, it will also support game chat and stereo audio through, you know, wirelessly from your PC through that adapter to your Xbox One controller using that headphone jack. So that's cool. That's very cool. I don't know how well the chat stuff is going to work on Windows PCs and how that's all going to show up. But you know, it's probably just going to be extra audio devices, but I don't know for sure. So we'll find out more details, well, at least by this fall when it comes out, I guess.
Cool. I have to wonder why these aren't just Bluetooth. Like, why do they need a wireless adapter?
I don't know. I don't know what, you know, for the controllers, they went with Wi-Fi Direct. Not really sure why they did that over Bluetooth. Maybe, you know, I don't know a lot about the tech specs behind the different standards. Maybe there's more bandwidth with Wi-Fi Direct than Bluetooth. Not really sure. You know, I left out one detail. They did change one other thing with the controllers. They improved the bumpers a little bit. They're more consistent now. You have to be super, super hardcore to notice things like that. I'm sure I would never notice that new change to the controller, that those buttons work a little bit better and more consistently across the entire bumper. But, you know, if you're like a professional Call of Duty player, maybe you care. Me, not so much. All right, well, it's another new week, and that means new deals with Gold. If you are an Xbox Live Gold subscriber, you've got an option to get some pretty good games again this week at really nice prices. A lot of sports games from EA discounted pretty heavily. If you want FIFA 15, the deluxe edition, it's 60% off. You can get Madden NFL 15. EA Sports UFC and NHL 15, all of those came out late last fall for 67% off. That's like $19 for those games. If you're interested in them and you're not interested in doing the EA Access thing, then these are great prices for those games. They've also got Sunset Overdrive on sale for 33% off, plus some of the DLC for Sunset Overdrive, and you know, a couple of other games. Overall, a pretty nice sale this week for actually both the Xbox One and the Xbox 360, as long as you're an Xbox Live Gold subscriber. One more quick bit of information. We mentioned that next week is E3. They've got to have more things to announce, despite the fact that they keep announcing things ahead of time. So if you want to find out what they're announcing as they're announcing it, you can watch the live stream of their press event. It starts Monday. That's June 15th at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it online. You can watch it on your Xbox. You can watch it on Spike TV. We'll have a link in the show notes to an article that will tell you everything you need to know about how to watch E3, the Microsoft press conference, and all of the other events that Microsoft is doing for E3. And then, of course, come back next week because we'll be covering all of that. That'll be the main focus of this show next week, I'm sure.
Do you have any predictions for what they might present?
You know, the thing, well, my prediction would have been a 1 terabyte Xbox One and a new controller with a headset jack. I'm really, really, really hoping that they're going to announce DVR support on the Xbox One. I think that there's a decent chance that we're going to see some fairly major UI enhancements. But I wonder if it'll be more tied to Windows 10. I think they'll probably talk some about how Windows 10 is going to affect the Xbox One. But, you know, the constantly bouncing between apps is slow and takes a while. So hopefully that's going to be changed a little bit. And hopefully they're going to make some things more quickly accessible from hitting the Xbox button. Things like adjusting audio levels and things like that. So I'm hoping to see some UI enhancements like that. And we'll, of course, hear tons and tons and stuff about games. Unfortunately, Richard, you probably didn't see this since you don't follow gaming news, but I know it's a game you're interested in. Quantum Break will not be on display at E3 this year.
Okay, how many years has it been now? 2 since they originally announced it.
Yep. Well, the game got delayed until early next year, so it's unfortunate. Yeah. But frankly, if they're not even going to show it at E3 this year, I'm not convinced that it's going to be an early 2016 release.
No, this is going to be the Duke Nukem of our generation.
I hope not. I really hope not, because this game looks really cool.
If it is, I hope it ends better.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I think is that, you know, last year they really went far in the opposite direction of the year prior. The year prior, it was all about video and a little bit about gaming. And what was about gaming had more to do with how gaming was tying in with all the other entertainment stuff and the amazing performance and graphics. Last year, with very little exception, was all about gaming. I think we're going to see a bit of a swing back. I think we're going to see some announcements more about the video, audio, and other entertainment aspects of this. And, you know, if they are thinking of turning the Xbox One into a DVR, they absolutely have to come up with some simplifications to the user interface, because right now that's way too complicated for your average person to use as a DVR.
Hmm. All right. Well, I think they have to spend less than 20% of the time talking about non-gaming things, or else
that's fair.
The gaming community and the gaming press will go ballistic on them.
So, that's fair.
All right. So we'll of course be back next week to talk about that. We'll also probably be talking about the launch of a new Windows phone on Verizon. It's rumored that this week we're going to see Verizon release the Lumia 735. This is a I guess you'd call this a mid-range phone, especially since it's in the 700 series and not like a 500 phone. It's got a 4.7-inch 720p display, a 1.2 gigahertz quad-core Snapdragon 400, fortunately a gig of RAM, and something we're really, really used to seeing on Windows phones, 8 gigs of onboard storage, and a micro SD slot. In terms of cameras, you've got a 6.7 megapixel camera on back, which is eh. And then on front, it's total selfie mode with a 5 megapixel wide angle camera on the front. So give this to your teens. They will love it. And I'm sure it'll be really cheap. So there you go. I don't think we need to spend much time on another mid-range Windows phone, but it looks like it's coming out on Verizon this week.
There you go. All right. Well, that is it for Microsoft news.
All right. Let's move on to some industry news then. So a few months ago, we talked a lot about HBO releasing their internet-only way of watching their content, where you didn't need a cable subscription, you just watch it online. And when HBO launched that, we were really excited. I was really bummed that it was debuting only on Apple devices, because that meant I couldn't get it. And that's still the case. It's still only on Apple devices. And we had wondered, is Showtime going to do the same thing? Well, this week, we got an official announcement from Showtime. They are, and it's coming in about a month. By July 12th, they will be releasing Showtime. It's just called Showtime. No special naming for the internet version of Showtime's service. And it's going to cost a little bit less than HBO's service. It's going to be $10.99 a month. No contracts. Just sign up. Watch what you want. When you're done, cancel. Like, this sounds perfect. This is how I want to finish watching Homeland. But I can't, because they're doing the same thing HBO is doing. And to start, it's only going to be available to users of Apple devices.
Are you 100% sure of that? Because I am not.
That's what I, you know, so we've got a link to this on Engadget, and that's what Engadget said. And they've got a link to the official announcement. And on the official announcement, it says, premiering on Sunday, July 12th, iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, and Apple TV users will be able to subscribe to Showtime. Mm. And then they do say that additional platforms and providers will be announced soon. We just don't know when or how that's all going to work. So my guess is Apple's got some exclusivity deal on Showtime, just like HBO does.
Interesting. Well, I hope it's not locked up for too long. I think that this is something that is necessary. I think it was expected. I'm frankly surprised that they're not trying to get the same price that HBO is getting, even though, in my opinion, it's not worth it. I think that this is a better price for the Showtime content. It's not as extensive or, in many cases, as good as what HBO has. One thing that's really interesting, though, is that they're going to be offering live feeds of the East Coast and West Coast networks. So in addition to being able to watch stuff in their libraries, you'll also have access to their live feed, which is kind of nice.
Does HBO's service not do that?
They do not do that, no.
Oh.
That is available on the, what is that TV service, that the ad hoc TV service that you can get on Xbox now?
Sling TV?
Sling. It's available on Sling. It is not available on HBO Now.
Oh, alrighty.
Now, the other thing that I think is worth noting is that Showtime, at least with Showtime Anytime, is notorious about taking shows down in critical windows for them. So, for example, maybe a year after a season of a show like, oh, I don't know, what's that show you want to watch, Homeland?
Uh-huh.
Airs, they may take all of those episodes down so that people will go and buy the Blu-ray discs. So,
yeah.
You know, this is something that CBS does all the time, and they do it with their Showtime property as well. So be aware of this. You're not necessarily getting access to everything the way people who are using HBO now might be used to.
Do they usually bring it back?
They usually do bring it back at some point, but in my experience, it's often not timely enough that you could catch up.
Okay. You know, I'm not sure that I really care that much because I'll just sign up for it whenever Homeland is available, watch what's available, and then cancel. I don't really even care about any, I don't think I care about any of these other shows that are on Showtime. But to be able to just watch through a couple of seasons in a month and then cancel, that's good enough for me. It saves me a lot of money that I would spend on the Blu-rays.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure.
All right. Well, one other service we talk a ton about on this show, and I'm surprised we haven't talked about it earlier this week, is Plex. A little bit of news out of Plex this week, if you are more security-minded, and frankly, you should be. And that is that Plex is now giving everyone who's using a Plex server an HTTP SSL certificate so that all of your communication between your Plex clients and your Plex server will now be encrypted via HTTPS. If you're not a web nerd and don't know what that means, every time you go to your bank website and your address bar changes and has a little green lock and all, you know, all the stuff that that has up there that gives you the warm, fuzzy feeling about having a secure connection, yeah, you're going to have that for Plex. And that's a good thing. And it doesn't cost you anything. So yeah, that's nice. Good news.
Very nice. I'm glad they're doing that. Speaking of Plex, we knew that Plex was going to be coming to TiVo boxes, and it's there. People with the TiVo Romeo and TiVo Premiere boxes and the TiVo Mini should now have a Plex app available to them in the interestingly categorized music and photos section, I think. Nonetheless, it is available, and I have not had a chance to try it yet because...
come on, Richard.
Been a busy week. You know, HomeKit came out. I've been putting out back-to-back shows. It's been a busy week.
This is why we told you months ago to get your Plex server ready.
I should have done that, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, clock's ticking. We need to hear how this works for you.
Yeah, I'll be eager to give it a quick try. Now, I don't have this in the notes, but I also just wanted to mention real quickly, Dave Zatz noted that TiVo came out with TiVo Online, which is an update, a really nice update to their My TiVo service where you could program your DVR from the web. But it's way more than that. It also allows you to play back content from your DVR over your network connection through a web browser. Now, currently, it's only inside your house, but apparently they're trying to work through the deals that would make it available outside your home as well, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. All right, so that's it for all of our news this week. Richard, what's going on in your entertainment center?
So while I have not been doing a whole lot to get my Plex server set up, I have been watching some television because I was determined to get through House of Cards before we recorded this episode.
So that we can spoil it for everybody.
Well, I mean, it spoiled itself for me. Because frankly, if you didn't see the ending coming, you've been watching the wrong show. I did not like this season. I agree with you. I don't know if I agree with you entirely, but it just didn't catch me. It was actually hard for me to get through some of the episodes. They had a couple good moments. They had a couple good political things that I think were interesting, but it became a soap opera, and that was frustrating to me.
Yeah, it's not something that I'm going to be rewatching just for fun in the next 6 months. I'll probably rewatch. You know, I don't know. You know, last year, for the previous two seasons, prior to, the new season coming out, I've watched the previous season in its entirety. And I don't know if I can do that with this season.
Yeah, I
might
I
just watch the last episode or two of season three before season four comes out. It's not so bad that I'm not going to give season four a try, but it definitely was the worst season of the three.
I think part of the problem was it was slow. Some of these episodes just were tedious.
Yeah. Yep.
It's absolutely a shame. Now, I also finished season 3 of Episodes. That's that half-hour comedy with Matt LeBlanc, and it's actually pretty entertaining. I really enjoy it. And, you know, it's so nice to have something that's just a half-an-hour show that if I don't think I'm going to make it through an hour, I'm really tired, but let's just watch something else before I go crash. This is a great show for that, and I'll hopefully be starting season 4 of that soon, and then I'm all caught up on that. Nice short seasons, too. I think it's somewhere between like 6 and 10 episodes a season. And then up next, I'm planning on watching the final season of Mad Men. I haven't seen any of the final season of Mad Men. Not the first half, that was, I think, a year ago, and not the second half that just finished. So I want to really dive through that next because I've enjoyed that show and I feel behind on that. And finally, I need some input from our listeners. I have been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The answer here is not stop watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So put your pens down. But I can't decide if I should watch the last two episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which occur after Age of Ultron. And I haven't seen Age of Ultron yet. So I've been holding out. And I don't know if I'm going to spoil anything by watching them. So anyone who has seen both, let me know.
All right. Well, I've seen Age of Ultron, but I'm not watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so I can't help you out there.
Yeah. I'd like to say that I've been doing something in my entertainment center that had to do with hardware or configuration, but nope. When I've been done with working, I've just plopped on the couch watching TV.
All right. Well, I'm basically in the same boat. My life has been absolutely insane lately, so I haven't been tinkering too much. I haven't even been watching all that. That's how busy my life has been. I haven't even watched much TV in the last week. But I did try out Sense8, that's not actually how you say it. It's pronounced Sense8. Okay? It's like a play on words. So okay. Sense8, this is the new show on Netflix from the Wachowskis. Is that how you pronounce it? It's the
I think so.
The siblings who made The Matrix and Cloud Atlas and Jupiter Ascending. It's sci-fi. It's about people who are somehow like emotionally linked and at times can see what's happening with those other people, and they're spread out all over the world. It's kind of weird, but that's okay. You know, I'm down with kind of weird sci-fi. The thing that I'm not liking about this and could prevent me from watching it is not only is it pretty dark. I mean, I can get around that, but there just seems to be this crazy obsession with totally overdoing pointless sexual content. There's just tons of it in the show, and I don't see, like, there isn't really a valid plot reason for all of it. It just seems like, hey, if we put this in, it'll be cool. Right, guys? Right? Know what I'm saying?
Like, I think it's the premium network mentality. It's like a lot of shows on Showtime, HBO, and Cinemax are the same way. There's just so much graphical sex in it, and oftentimes it just seems unnecessary.
Yeah, it is completely unnecessary. And that, along with, like I said, with it being really, really dark and gritty and stuff, I'm not sure that it's going to hold me on. I think I've watched the first two episodes, maybe two and a half. I'm going to watch a couple more and see how it goes. But if it doesn't get like really blow my mind amazing, I'm going to cancel and go maybe check out Turn, like we mentioned at the beginning of the show.
Now I get the call back. Okay.
There you go. All right. Well, that's all I've been doing in my entertainment center.
All right. Well, one quick announcement before we wrap things up, and that's that I'm going to be on Pop Tech Radio again this Saturday. If you get the syndicated radio show Pop Tech Radio in your area, give a listen. I'll be on probably at about quarter after or shortly thereafter, quarter after noon on Eastern time, and I'll be talking about HomeKit and its kind of place in the smart home and whether you should be diving right in yet or not.
All right, cool. There, that's going to be awesome. So I assume you'll have a link to that radio show in the show notes for our listeners so that we can check that out. And if for some reason they can't check it out, well, there's going to be an episode of Home On that you and I are going to record where I think we're probably going to talk a little bit about HomeKit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Maybe just a little. So that's it for this week's episode of Entertainment 2.0. If you want to catch up with us, you can chat back with us in a lot of ways. We're on Twitter. Richard's account is at Richard Gunther. Mine is at Josh Pollard. And the website is just at Digi Media Zone. That's D-I-G-I Media Zone. We're also on Facebook, so you can like us at facebook.com/theDMZ. We're on Google+. There's that Windows Media Center community over there that we mentioned earlier in the show. You can send us an email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. You can also check out some of our other podcasts like, Home On. Covering the latest home automation news.
How about that? And in fact, we had our episode just this past week with Ecobee. And I don't know what your take on that was listening to that, but I had so much fun talking with the guy from Ecobee. He was a great person to interview.
Rahul Raj, I think his name was.
That's correct.
He should be podcasting. He was really good.
He's fantastic. And we've had so much good feedback on this episode already. I've had a number of people tell me they want to switch to Ecobee now that they are so interested in this product after that. So that's great. That's great.
Yeah, I told Jen about the Ecobee 3 and she was like, why don't we have this? So
there you go. So, you know, I'm really happy that we got that one out, and we're going to be having our 50th episode celebrating 2 years of this show. We'll be recording that just after we record this. So if you're listening live, you'll be able to listen to us record Home On live as well. And that's going to be with you, Josh. So hope you're ready.
I'm ready. I'm really looking forward to this episode. All right. But we still got to finish Entertainment 2.0. So check out all of our podcasts from the DMZ. You can find them on iTunes, Zune. We're on Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio. And you know what you can do at like all of those places except for Zune? You can leave ratings and reviews. And if you do that, it helps us out and we really appreciate it. So thank you for anyone who has done that or anyone who's going to do that. And then the other really fun thing you can do, even more fun than writing a review, is chatting with us while we record these shows. We typically record Entertainment 2.0 live on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes that changes, like this week, but we always tweet when we're going to be messing with the schedule. So follow us on Twitter and then come back and join the live show. But that's going to do it for episode 332. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next week for episode 333. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.